You're listening to
the DEA Podcast.
Opinions expressed on the DEA podcast are merely the streaming thoughts of the host and guests and should not be relied upon or acted upon without further due diligence. If you do not agree to this, then you must immediately switch off and run far, far away. Permission to republish the DEA podcast is permitted, providing a link to the show notes is included.
Podcast app, energy, performance, certificate.org.
This is part two of a two-part interview with the Deputy Chief Executive of AHIP, Paul Broadbent. In this part, Paul answers your questions. Alex, a.k.a. EnergyWise, Alex was on the last podcast, and also in tandem with Simon too, both asked basically the same question. Is it due to the gross inefficiency of your larger members that we see the need for AHIP to lobby government for the delay of first-day marketing?
No, is a short answer, and I guess this is in reference to a press release or interview that I gave a couple of weeks ago, where I said that the extension of first day marketing for a limited period of time would be a sensible approach. Now, where we sit on that, I'll talk about two sides to this. That isn't AHIP's stated policy. AHIP's stated policy is actually that at the 31st of December the year, our recommendation to government that was put to both the Ministry in and the Ministry of Cooper in writing and verbally was to say, at the end of this, what you need, because first of all, we've got enough energy assessors. I think we've done that one to death in the last hour. So actually, why not get back to you? You can market the property once you have a sale statement, an EPC, the land registry information, because this can all be got very, very quickly. It became very, very apparent to me over the last couple of weeks that the Tories were looking at going really, really strong on the government. We'd had the RICS talk about this being Armageddon for the housing market should government roll out to one or two bedroom properties. The NAEA is saying the same thing. Grant Shapps was quoted in the Express to say Armageddon is going to happen on the 1st of January because you need a home information part before you market your house. So my view was, okay, that pressure is going to come to a crunch point, and that was going to result in either the government not rolling out two or three bedroom properties before the end of the year. If they hadn't done that, I think that would have been a disaster for all concerned. And I think in terms of a quid pro quo, what we needed the government to do was to commit to rolling out all of the properties, because that, first of all, is the most important thing. If that meant delaying first-day marketing for a little period of time while one and two bedroom properties bed down, whilst estate agents get used to the full market, I don't have an issue with that. But very, very strongly, my view is that we need to have all of this information up front when the property is marketed, for people to get the value out of it. I think concerns from DEAs don't just rest upon that. I think part of this is about enforceability, and that it is one and two bedroom properties live, yet there's no drop dead date or there's no measurement in terms of marketing. People might continue to avoid it. That isn't a question for first day marketing. That's a question about enforcement, which has got to be very, very high on ours and the government's agenda to make sure there's strong messages sent out to say that, you know, we're being serious about this at trading standards and the OFT. And if people are avoiding these regulations, there are penalties to pay. And this isn't a home information pack or £200. This is eventually being banned from practicing as an estate agent because you're not complying with the law. And they're two things that are both very, very important.
I agree. I think what lies at the heart of this question, Paul, is the fact that many DEAs have felt the need to actually branch out into actually providing a home information pack rather than just the EPC, purely because of the pressures on fees at the moment. And the pressures on fees are perceived to be coming from your larger members, in quotes. What are your feelings about DEAs actually now having to compete with your members as individuals, so to speak?
Well, I think as I said earlier when we were talking about our own membership, the home information industry isn't a club run by six or eight big organisations. You know, we've got 105 members. There's probably another 30 or 40 organisations that are out there providing home information packs that are not members of ours yet. And I think there is room for both types. I mean, national providers and some of the bigger state agency chains want one single provider that they can use nationally that's national price and works for their business. However, you know, the number of 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 different state agents in Colchester might not necessarily want to go to a big national provider, may want a different offering from a smaller local provider who they know very well, they've been dealing with for a number of years. The solicitor's around the corner, and, you know, actually the solicitor, the energy assessor and the estate agent can work together to pull the home information pack together themselves. They then have the opportunity to charge you know, what they want for that service, but actually it's got to be competitive. But in terms of setting their own fees in that locality, it becomes far, far more easy if you've got that cooperation. So there is also room for organisations like that. I think there is downward pressure on the price of an EPC purely because of what we've talked about. This, you know, people will get the product for the cheapest price they can in order to give them an increased chance of taking a bigger cut of that pie that's available in the whole process. But what we actually now need to get to is not just keep pushing these down, because it can't be pushed down much further than it is. I'm sure DEAs would agree with that. But is actually talking about building the pack up to what it ought to have been in the first place, getting the government to do some real targeted publicity on home information packs that isn't just a coloured house with a graph next to it, but it's talking to people about how this is going to save them stress in the transaction, how this is going to get them to exchange of contracts quicker if we've got the right information in the pack, and actually making it a valuable product. And at that point, people will pay for a product that they perceive to add value to their transaction. And organisations that can offer that and convince people that that's what their product does are the ones that will win in this industry going forward, and I think that's absolutely right.
So this it's nothing to do with the inefficiency of some of the larger members.
No, because trying to hold back. It isn't at all, because that, as I say to you, the stated policy position of AHIP is exactly that I've just read out, which said first name marketing should be reintroduced or abolished. They need to have the pack before marketing the property should be reintroduced on the 1st of January. That was the policy position that our members came to.
Right.
The comment that was made in the media about it being a sensible approach to extend the current provisions was, my view, not reflective of the members.
Okay. Let's quickly move on then. Chris Serenity follows up that question by saying, are you happy with a 6-month delay in the removal of the first day of marketing principle? Was this the length of extension you was after, or is it overkill in your view?
I don't think it needed to be extended that long. I think a sensible view would have been to April. And the only reason I say April is because a number of other transitional arrangements expire in April. So we have transitional arrangements around insurance on personal searches. We have the implementation of new build properties requiring home information packs coming in April. And actually, it would have just been sensible to lump all the transitional arrangements together and end them all on the same date. We could have done that in regulations, which wouldn't have required any amendments. So I don't think it warranted a 6-month delay at all. I think 2 or 3 months to get things in, bedded down, wrap it all up in April and get back to needing the pack before you put your house on the market would have been a sensible approach. But what we're faced with now, we're faced with June, and the challenge for the industry now is to ensure, and this is both our members and those that sit outside of our membership, is to make sure that we can get packs together in the quickest time possible with the most useful information in them and try and solve some of these problems around provision of leasehold management information, try and solve some of these problems around, you know, the personal search industry versus the public sector search industry, and provide evidence to the government that all this is moving in the right direction to stop them making any further extensions to first-name marketing provisions and other things that just don't help us build this back up to what it ought to do. So, you know, we are where we are. We've got it till the 1st of June. Some people may think I was right to make that statement. Some people may think I was wrong to make that statement, and everybody's entitled to the view. But rest assured, I made that statement because, in my view, it was the right thing to say at the time for the industry, and it gives us that opportunity to go back to government with some hard evidence and say, this is what you do next.
I predicted a couple of weeks before the announcement that the government would put back the first day of marketing because of the state of the housing market, because I don't think they could risk anybody coming out from the flanks and saying HIPS is killing the market, there's a slowdown in houses coming onto the market. And I think that's just my view. I think that's probably the reason why they put that back.
I mean, yeah, and I don't think any statements I or anybody else made an awful lot of difference. I think the fact that they hadn't announced a rollout of 1 or 2 bedroom homes by the end of November And the flak that they've already got for making that announcement from some quarters is to have said, we're going to implement one or two bedroom homes on the 14th of December, which are predominantly the biggest section of leasehold properties that we're going to see, because a majority of one or two bedroom properties are flats, particularly given the development in that sector of the market over the last few years. The government has been absolutely slaughters within rolling out home information packs and then saying you need all of this by the 1st of January or you can't market your home. There was no option at all that they would have had to extend it.
Kurtz has posited a few questions. How disappointed are you as an organisation that after 2 years, only now are DEAs getting together and representing themselves?
Well, I'm disappointed in a way. I mean, I think there's been organisations there to represent energy assessors and HIs in terms of gnarly that was gnarly and you know what the membership levels of that organisation are like, I don't know, but it seemed to me over the last 2 years, a lot of the time when I've been interviewed about HIPs, particularly since the 18th of July last year when the Home Condition Report was made voluntary, a lot of the focus for me, questioning that's coming to me, is about domestic energy assessors and their business and their future and so on, which I'm entirely happy to my view on, but as I said before, I represent PAC providers, not domestic energy assessors per se. So whilst I've been answering those questions in the way I personally feel domestic energy assessors would want me to, and if I haven't answered them in the right way, then I do apologise for that. It's not my area of speciality because I don't represent domestic energy assessors, so therefore don't have the day-to-day contact with them to understand what their real issues are in the marketplace, other than the fact that there's no work for them, which is apparent to everybody. So I don't know that there's not been an opportunity for representative bodies for energy assessors, but I think the person's right in that they haven't had the profile, perhaps, that the AHIP and other organisations have had.
If, God forbid, but if you had this time out again, would you reach out to DEAs sooner, do you think? Do you think it would have been an asset to have them on board sooner to increase your strength?
Yes. Yeah. I think so. I think any industry that speaks with one voice is far better than an industry that speaks with several. And I think from the government's perspective, and actually what's given some real fuel to the opposition to the implementation of HIPs has been, you know, in some parts there's been some fighting in between domestic energy assessors and HIP providers, which doesn't help, and I understand where the tensions come from. But just from the outside, when you've got, you know, a brand new industry that's trying to be formed, and it appears to some people that there's some infighting going on and different views shared, doesn't really help us as an industry to go forward and make it the most successful implementation. So I think yes, had there been an organisation to represent DEAs, and at the same sort of time that AHIP was formed, I think we probably would have worked very, very well together. But I still think that we I don't think it's been necessarily to the detriment of the implementation of the programme. I think the government have kind of done that themselves. But it would always help if you're speaking as one voice as an industry and all the sectors that touch on it.
Okay. Neil also asks, what support could the DEA HI community give AHIP in promoting the positive benefits of the EPC and or HIP?
Well, they could add very greatly to that. We've talked earlier about landlords, particularly about taking advantage of the information that's in an EPC and implementing changes. We've actually pulled together now a meeting that happens next week on Wednesday the 12th, which is a cross-industry forum on how do we drive people to take action on that that's in the EPC. And we have a number of energy assessor organisations coming along to that, as well as some big retailers and some politicians with an interest in energy, to try and pull this together, because if we wait for government to incentivise people to do the work, we could well be waiting for a very, very long time. And I think government intervention so far hasn't been the most successful. So in terms of industry, the industry needs to innovate to drive out these benefits. And I think going forward, PAC providers, domestic energy assessors and conveyancers are very, very closely linked and really do have to work together closely to make it a success.
There's a meeting on the Wednesday the 18th, did you say?
Wednesday the 12th.
Wednesday the 12th. And that's an open forum. Anyone can go, I take it.
It's not an open forum as in a seminar type thing. It's a round table that we pull together with a large number of trade associations from across the industry and energy companies. So, to give you an example, the Friends of the Earth, some big retailers coming along, the Institute of Domestic Energy Assessors will be invited along. We've also got various renewable energy trade associations coming along, the Wind Turbines Association and so on, just to talk about how we get people to increase the use of the information that's in EPCs, Energy Savings Trust and so on, just to come together with some industry views about how we take this forward.
Well, all the best with that. Please let us know how it goes on.
We will do that, absolutely. I mean, it's important, and this isn't all going to be solved in one day around the table, but we need to start this conversation and work very, very closely together going forward. And as I said, DEAs are in the box seat in terms of educating people on the benefits of carrying out these improvements. I know there's been some conflict as to whether some domestic energy assessors think they can talk to people like this, others think they can't, and again, the government clarity has been clear as mud on this. But they're absolutely in the box seat, and there's no reason at all, as long as there's no conflicts of interest, why energy assessors shouldn't take the lead on it.
What else? And his final question from Neil is, how many DEAs do AHIP think is enough?
It's difficult. Enough to deliver with HIPs, I think I would probably concur with the government's view. But it depends on the market. I mean, there's too many at the moment, but we've been operating in a market at 60% of the rollout, with actually probably only 70 or 80% of what's normally in the market. So that contributes to that. In a point in the year, you're going to need more. But around 3,000 to 3,500, I think, is probably about right for delivering home information packs, including some part-time working. In terms of commercials and rented, there's going to need far more. So I couldn't put a figure on it. It's not a calculation that I've done.
I don't suppose you would know how many of your members themselves actually employ, or the numbers that they employ directly, do you?
No, not the numbers that they employ. Okay. We have a number of members that do employ directly. We also have a number of members that deal with panels, not in totality.
I think it'd be an interesting question, really, because what we don't know out of all this is how many have already left the industry.
Yeah.
You know, that could turn out to be 2,000 people.
Well, it could be. Cool, that's absolutely right. And I think actually that was increasing up until this latest announcement was made. The people were just couldn't see any future. You know, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if pack providers are really starting to feel the pressure now in terms of the investment that they've made and with the global credit crunch and so on, you know, investors start to get very, very nervous when government are making no signs of going forward. But actually, and I've always said this in all press, and other interviews, is that, you know, the people that are really bearing the brunt of this indecision by government are domestic energy assessors and home inspectors who have remortgaged the house in a lot of cases, or take on fire and given up the job to go and train as doing this, and then have to go home at night and explain to the wife or explain to the husband, I've done this now, I've left my job, there's no career for me. Well, they're the people that have really, really suffered, and they're the people that we really, really need to make sure have the work going forward and have the career that they were sold in the first place.
Imperative, isn't it? It's imperative for your members as well as the industry as a whole. We don't want to end up with bitter and twisted people going into people's homes.
Well, you don't. And from government's perspective, you know, government may think big business can look after itself, and that's fine. You know, if you're a business, you take a calculated risk about whether you want to invest in something or not, and the government's view is that, well, if you take a punt and you lose, then you know, that's business for you. But you can't do that with individuals' lives.
Okay, last three questions, I believe. Dan Walters asks, what are AHIP doing about the Conservative Party's decision to scrap HIPs should they win the next election?
We have a good working relationship with the Conservative Party, to be honest. We had a good working relationship with Michael Gove, and we continue to have a good working relationship with Grant Shapps and meet on a fairly regular basis. Now, I think our view on this is we're very, very mixed, because the Conservatives say we'll scrap HIPs when we get into power, and that's absolutely fine. You know, if that's their policy line, that's okay. My message always back to the Conservatives is that why? why would you scrap something that's designed for the right reasons and actually could be the absolute right product? Now, what you hear recently from the Conservative Party is government have got rid of the only thing that matters in terms of the home condition reports, and when we have the floods over the summer, a home information pack doesn't tell you whether your house is going to flood. Well, okay then, add that in. Get into the power, add those documents in, build it back up to something of use and continue with it. Because the worry I have for this industry, not the HIC industry, the whole transaction marketplace and consumers ultimately who do get a raw deal in a pre-HIPS environment and will get a better deal in a post-HIPS environment if we as an industry get it right, is that there's been no government intervention of any size in the home buying and selling process since the Law of Property Act 1925. Now, if it's taken a government this long with a 10-year gestation period to try and implement something like home information packs that have been so controversial and become a political hot potato, actually, is any future government, if this doesn't go ahead and the Conservatives come in and scrap it, ever going to have the energy to try and reform this industry again? And I can't see it. And we'll end up being stuck with what we've got. We've now got a regulatory framework within home information packs that can work into the future. It's not a panacea for all the problems in the housing market as it stands today, but it's a step in the right direction. And we need to continue stepping in the right direction, taking these steps, so we end up with a revolution in this industry, which I think is very, very possible if the industry works together. If they scrap it, I don't think there'll ever be any reform.
Clive Joan writes, how are AHIP promoting the benefits of HIPS and ensuring that buyer's solicitors use the information provided in the pack?
We are working very closely with both the Law Society, with the Council for Licensed Conveyancers, and with our own conveyancing members. We've got some of the big conveyancing organisations in our own membership, as well as some high street solicitors. And, you know, with our poll and our own membership, and this really comes down to, will they accept personal searches? And the big drive we've got on next year is promoting the HIP code that we talked about earlier on in the programme, because the HIP code essentially warrants the contents of a home information pack that's provided. And it doesn't just protect the buyer against this information that's contained within the pack, but it also protects the estate agent. It protects the buyer, it protects the seller, it protects the solicitor, and it protects the mortgage lender. And I think where we are today, some solicitors are nervous in terms of accepting personal searches because, you know, in the old days, there were sometimes inferior products that didn't carry sufficient insurance. But it's an education thing that says that actually the regulations increase the requirements on solicitors to carry professional indemnity insurance. Of personal search providers to carry out professional indemnity insurance. There's further information that's in there, and there's very, very strict rules on where insurance can be used if information isn't available. And on top of all that, the HIP code protects them. So if there's anybody who relies on that information and it's incorrect, then the HIP code is there to protect them. So that's the education thing. The other thing with personal searches is out of 500,000 personal searches have been done per year, over the last 5 years, there's been 25 complaints as information that's in there. So that tells you the risk of relying on information in the home information packs. And we're working together with Which and other consumer-facing organisations next year to do a real big publicity drive on don't buy a home information pack from a provider unless it has the HIP code logo on it, in the same way as you wouldn't book a package holiday if it didn't have at all or add to in the corner, because you know you can have confidence in the supplier and confidence in the product.
That begs my next question then, Paul. Yet another fee for DEAs who wish to provide that service.
Another fee for DEAs? What, to register for the HIP code?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I don't think I would make any apology for making a business, if a DEA wants to get into a business to provide HIPs, by paying what isn't an onerous amount of money. If you're talking about a DEA being a one-man HIP provider, if you like, because registration for the HIP code goes on number of staff engaged in the HIP provision, you are talking about an annual fee of £371, I think, to subscribe to the HIP code. Now, I think that people ought to pay that because of the additional protection it gives to consumers. And I don't make any apology of you know, asking people to pay out money to register for a scheme that I believe has got teeth and provides real consumer protection.
They would say it's your members driving down the fees, they've got enough fees on the plate at the moment. They're even having to pay out to be a member of a data controllers with the Information Commissioner's Office. £35 a year, monthly fees for software, lodgement fees, insurance, top up the car, computer, printing. They never came into this industry to become HIT providers. It's just that this seems to be an avenue in which they can keep their head above water. But in order to, for them now to compete into the future, I dare say they will be thinking, I've now got to be a member of a HIPCO, which is an additional £300 a year.
Yeah.
You can see why they feel browbeaten, to put it mildly.
I can see why they feel browbeaten, but as I said earlier, this is about HIP providers. That's who the HIPCO's there to service, to ensure that the industry isn't brought into disrepute by people not providing this additional protection over and above the law. And I think, going back to when I was a lender, if you get back to sort of the 90s and the lending industry now, what the FSA were then looking at doing, or the government were then looking at doing, was looking at regulating mortgage lenders and mortgage business. And the question that then came out of the Council of Mortgage Lenders was, well, if the industry self-regulates in an effective way, where would it become on your priority list? And I think the government's view is that, well, if you self-regulate in an effective way, then it's not going to be our highest priority. It's bound to move down the list as long as it's working. And that's what the mortgage industry did. And it was 10 years, in fact, longer than that, it was 13 years, from when that mortgage code of lending practice was set up till the FSA effectively regulated the mortgage industry. And I think where the government are, if you look at DEAs and you look at home inspectors and you look at lawyers, they are all regulated. HIP providers are not. And the Conservatives see that as a gap. Some of the other opposition organisations see that as a gap and say that essentially home information practice is a charter for cowboys. Now, I don't believe it is. But actually, if we don't have effective self-regulation in the industry, that's something else that can be thrown at the industry. And, you know, given the implementation of home information practice over the last 10 years so far, would people rather pay £300 to subscribe to a self-effective industry regulator, or would you rather government try to design this themselves? Because you can bet your bottom dollar it'll be more expensive and it will be less effective.
I don't know. I'm aware that we're running up against time here, but I always ask myself, if an industry regulates itself, then it's going to be in the interests of the industry to regulate itself. And therefore, I believe personally that there is a strong argument that government should regulate an industry.
Yeah, well, that's fine, and that's one view. But the thing is, an industry regulating itself is more effective and more nimble to changes. And essentially, you know, AHIP don't regulate the HIP providers. It's the Property Codes Compliance Board that regulates the HIP providers. Now, the Property Codes Compliance Board's board that makes the decisions on compliance checks and everything else and takes the decision on inspection regimes and recommends what ought to happen to changes to both the HIP code and the search code has majority representation from the consumer interest, not from any industry interest at all. So those people are not HIP providers. In fact, the only person that sits on the board of the PCCB that is related to the HIP industry is Mike Hockenden, who's Director General of AHIP. Now, Mike's on there because AHIP devised the HIP code. But next year, Mike won't be on there once the PCCB is established, because it really has to be a fully independent organisation. And the only person that's on that board that relates to searches and the search industry and the search code is Fiona Hoyle, because she's chairman of COPSO. So, you know, those two people are on there out of eight people. So it's 6-2 in the consumer interest already. So there isn't any self-preservation or, you know, we're not going to inspect those people over there because they're our members and they pay our bread and butter. This is a total independent regime who have the powers and the authority to dish out what sanctions they wish. And we have no control over that, and nor would we wish to have.
It's the perception, isn't it, Paul? But I will say that I think it's probably better to have it now rather than when some tragic story unfolds in the future. And, you know, government start threatening it. So,
well, that's right. And you're going to have a story within the first year or so where there's been your poor old lady down in Eastbourne, who's been ripped off by a home information provider who isn't regulated. And, you know, we don't need that other that additional type of bad publicity in this industry. So the more we can prevent it and get the message out that there are protections there for consumers, the better that is in my mind.
Okay, last question you'll be pleased to know. Rant Shapps posted on the forum a few weeks ago, don't know whether you were aware, that DEAs will be better off once HIPs are scrapped. And it was actually Grant Shapps, this was checked out.
Okay.
Do AHIP agree that DEAs will be better off once HIPs are scrapped? It's a bit of a divisive question, now, isn't it?
It's a divisive question, but I don't see how DEAs would be better if HIPs are scrapped. I think there's a need, I don't know exactly what his drivers are for that comment, but there's a need under a European directive to have a number of EPCs in this country. That doesn't change whether you are in a HIP regime or not in a HIP regime. You know, the same rules apply. EPCs still need to be carried out on the same properties in the same time frame. So I actually don't think there'll be any difference in terms of, you know, DEAs under a non-HIP regime or under a HIP regime, because there's no more work under a non-HIP regime, there's no less work. Perhaps different people are paying their wages and all the DEAs will be independent, if that's what he's getting at, then potentially, but that's never going to happen. It's exactly the same as chartered surveyors can all be independent now, but the majority of them work through panels, because it means that's where they get the business from, and I think that would be the same for DEAs, so I don't buy that. I think it would be exactly the same.
By the way, that question was from Clive Jones. I think what he was getting at, bearing in mind the time this was posted, just before, I believe, HIPs were announced, is because at the conference you held, actually, at the PCS Expo, Ian Wright stood up and basically said that they were waiting for the housing market to pick up. And then that sort of shifted the focus, not on numbers of DEAs able to carry out EPCs, but now it's more focused on HIPs.
Yeah.
And we could argue that, therefore, the HIPs now were holding EPCs and DEAs to hostage because of the housing market. So would it not be better now that we were set free and just got on with it, because there are 6,000 people starving on the poverty line?
I think that's one view. But the facts are, Mike, that, you know, if HIPs were coming today and the Tories, when they next get in, are talking about EPCs, there's no vehicle, regulatory vehicle in place at the moment to deliver EPCs. That wouldn't be deliverable for another 12 months if you talk to government about delivering another vehicle. And essentially what you're saying there is that you scrap HIPs, DEAs have no work for 12 months whilst they define another regime about how to get EPCs out there. And I know, you know, before I get slaughtered for saying that, I could think of a delivery vehicle to deliver EPCs and out HIPs now, as I'm sure most DEAs could, and you could, and Grant Shapps can as well. But the fact is, the machinery of government doesn't work at that speed. So it would take another 12 months before you've even got the vehicle in place to enable that to happen. So therefore, there's another 12 months without any money. It doesn't help anybody.
What about the Green Home Service, though? They're doing an energy efficiency very similar to the EPC, it sounds. Not quite.
Well, there's lots of things that sound very similar to the EPC. There's warm front initiatives that a lot of local authorities in this country, and people are going out and doing these and making recommendations to people that live in their homes in that area about energy efficiency savings. And it's very, very similar information that's in the EPC. The fact is, those people doing those warm front assessments are not qualified to go out and do an EPC. So it's a different qualification, and that's what I'm talking about, machinery or government. They might be similar products, but the same people can't do them. And EPCs have to be lodged. There's a lot more requirements on people that carry out EPCs and people that carry out these other energy assessments. And to change the regime takes changes and takes time at the machinery of government level, because they all have to be met within regulations. So Green Homes is fine, and there's certain things in there, but this all doesn't deliver regulations that relate to delivering European Union directive on EPCs, and that all takes time, and that just isn't going to happen overnight. As I said, we can all come up with, you know, better ways of delivering EPCs outside of a HIPs arena if they wanted to, but the facts are, the time just isn't there.
Paul, it's at this time of the show that we ask you to pimp your site. You deserve it, Paul.
Do what?
You deserve it.
You deserve it. Well, pimp my site.
Worked hard for this. Pimp your site. Just so that people can get there and read up on you. It's www.HIP Alliance, is it?
HIPAssociation.co.uk. What we've got on there, I mean, there's a list of all of our members on there. There's copies of the HIP code various news items that we've got going on. But I'll be honest with you, where we're looking at going with our site over the next month or two is a complete redesign of our own site. So I will be interested in views from energy assessors and other people, so any recommendations that think, you know, any information that would be of use to them on that site, and any information that's on there now that isn't of use to them. We do actually have a facility called Register as a Domestic Energy Assessor on our site, and what that does is anybody that isn't directly employed can register the details on that site, and those details are made available to all of our members if they wish to contact them for employment opportunities and so on. So there's that opportunity for those that want to do it. But have a look at the site, give us some feedback on what information would be good for you, or in terms of any other policy objectives you'd like us to start considering to take that's going to help the DEA world, because as I said before, DEAs, PAC providers, conveyancers and estate agents have got to work together to make this work, so we're all on the same side.
I would ask that you put RSS up there. If you don't know exactly what that is, ask the person who's developing your site. Basically, okay. Then it allows me to pick it up in my feed reader. Any news that you deliver is automatically delivered to me.
Sure.
I think that would be a help, so that we can all keep abreast.
That's great.
But other than that, Paul, thanks ever so much for coming on. I just only hope that we can all live together peacefully one day with the whales.
Well, I think we should do. I mean, times have been tense, but let's hope things do start to pick up now, and we can start delivering this policy into the marketplace and change people's perceptions of it.
Thanks for coming on once again, and for everybody listening, thanks for listening. Next week, I think we've got hopefully Peter Ambrose of the Partnership Limited. Wrote an interesting article for the Rick Safaz magazine this week. So check that up before you listen next week. Once again, Paul, thanks ever so much. Good luck to you and Mike and AHIP as a whole.
Thank you.
And we'll speak again. Everybody, cheerio. Say goodbye, Paul.
Thanks, Mike. You're listening to the DEA Podcast.
Podcast at energy. Best performance. Certificate. .org. You might have.